Okay, let's try to unpack this. It is Saturday, January 31st, 2026, and honestly, I feel like I need a stiff drink and maybe a flow chart just to get through this week's news. The internet didn't just break, it like shattered into a million little pieces of hype and confusion. We have Amazon finally putting a face to the God of War. We have Sony apparently building some kind of pocket monster to fight the Steam Deck. And then there's Windows 12, which is basically telling us, hey, nice computer you have there. Shame it's too dumb to run my new OS.
It really has been one of those weeks where you just look at the headlines and realize the ground is shifting under our feet. I mean, if you look at the stack of sources we're diving into today, there's a very specific tension emerging. On one side, you have the entertainment world shows and games realizing they need to go back to basics, back to, raw emotion and strict fidelity. And on the other side, you have the hardware, the chips, the phones, the operating systems. They are leaving basics behind entirely.
Right, they're going full sci-fi. It feels like the tech is trying to become smarter than the person using it.
Exactly. It's a collision between human storytelling and post-human technology. We're looking at devices that want to predict what you want before you even ask for it, and in some cases, generate reality for you so you don't have to deal with the, imperfections of the real world.
Which sounds great until the robot uprising starts. But before we get to the scary AI stuff, we have to start with the news that has been dominating every single group chat I am in. The God of War Amazon series.
The casting heard around the world.
Seriously, the rumors have been flying for what, 3, maybe 4 years? But we finally have a name, Ryan Hurst.
We do. And sources confirm the ink is dry. Ryan Hurst is officially Kratos.
Okay, can we just pause and appreciate the absolute like 40 chess level of irony here? For the listeners who maybe didn't play God of War Ragnarok back in 2022, Ryan Hurst was in that game, but he wasn't Kratos. He was Thor. He was the guy trying to smash Kratos into paste with a hammer.
It is a fascinating pivot. He did the motion capture and the voice for Thor, and he was incredible. He brought this heavy, drunk, sort of tragic menace to the character. But casting him as Kratos for live action, it's a brilliant move for a few reasons. I mean, if you know him from Sons of Anarchy as Opie, you know he has that massive, imposing physique. He is a mountain of a man.
He is huge. But Kratos isn't just about having big biceps. I mean, look at the disaster that was the Halo series. They took a faceless super soldier and tried to make him too chatty, too human, but in all the wrong ways.
And that is where this production seems to be learning from past mistakes. The sources we're looking at, they emphasize that the showrunners are sticking strictly to the 2018 game timeline.
Which is crucial context. For anyone who hasn't played it, the 2018 God of War isn't the old hack and slash where Kratos is just screaming at the sky and murdering the Greek pantheon. This is sad dad Kratos. He's older, he's tired, his wife just died, and he's left with this son, Atreus, that he barely knows.
Exactly. It's a road trip story. They're taking the mother's ashes to the highest peak in the north. It's somber. And that requires a very specific kind of acting. It's not about shouting lines. It's about acting with your back, as they say. Kratos conveys more with a grunt or a heavy sigh than most characters do with a monologue. Hurst has that deep, rumbling resonance in his voice, but he also has those sad eyes. He can play wounded animal very, very well.
That's a great way to put it. Wounded animal, fans seem to be loving it, which is rare. Usually the internet's default setting is just hate. But there is another rumor floating around in these leaks that has me arguably even more excited.
You're talking about the Allfather.
The Allfather himself. The rumors say Mandy Patinkin might be stepping in as Odin.
Now, that is an inspired choice.
Right, because in the game, Odin isn't this Zeus-like figure throwing lightning bolts. He's a mob boss, a manipulator. And Mandy Patinkin, I can just visualize him sitting in a dark room whispering threats that are 10 times scarier than if he was screaming.
It adds a level of gravitas that elevates the whole project. It signaled that Amazon isn't just trying to make a video game adaptation. They're trying to make a prestige drama that just happens to include frost giants.
Let's hope they pull it off. But speaking of frost giants and swords, let's pivot to the gaming world itself, The Witcher 4, or Project Polaris, as the cool kids call it. CD Projekt Red has been pretty tight-lipped, but the leaks this week are massive.
They are. And they confirm a major shift in the franchise's identity. We knew Ciri Geralt's adopted daughter would be involved, but the new gameplay details confirm she isn't just a cameo or a side character, she is the protagonist.
Which fundamentally changes how the game feels, right? I mean, I love Geralt. I spent hundreds of hours with him.
Yeah.
But fighting as Geralt is, well, it's heavy. You're a tank. You're drinking potions, preparing oils, doing that pirouette thing. It's tactical.
It is methodical. But the descriptions of series gameplay in these leaks use words like lightning and fluidity. They're building this in Unreal Engine 5. And that matters because the engine allows for much faster, more complex animation blending than their old Reed engine ever could.
So what does that actually look like on screen?
The standout mechanic they're detailing is called Blink.
Okay, Blink. So teleportation.
Yes, but it's integrated directly into the sword combos. So imagine you're surrounded by five enemies. As Geralt, you'd roll away, maybe cast a shield spell, and wait for an opening. As Ciri, you strike the first enemy, and mid-swing, you teleport through the second enemy to hit the third one from behind. It's constant kinetic motion.
That sounds incredible. It's like playing as a superhero compared to a soldier.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And it's paired with a new magic system based on chaos energy.
Mm.
In the lore, Ciri is incredibly powerful as source. She doesn't use the simple signs Geralt used. Chaos energy is described as volatile and destructive. You aren't just pushing enemies back with a wind spell. You are like tearing the fabric of reality to hurt them.
It sounds like a total power fantasy. But here's the problem with all these next-gen descriptions. Tearing the fabric of reality usually requires a computer that costs as much as a used Honda Civic.
It does. And that brings us right to the hardware wars.
Yeah, let's talk about Somi. Because just when we thought handhelds were settling down between the Switch and the Steam Deck, Sony decides to re-enter the chat.
They do. And this is interesting because after the PlayStation Portal launched a couple of years ago, people were confused.
You did.
It's just a screen that streamed games from your PS5. You couldn't take it on a plane unless the plane had amazing Wi-Fi.
Which they never do.
Exactly. But the Portal sold well. It proved the demand was there. So now, the leaks out of Tokyo R&D are describing the Qlite Pro.
Yeah.
And to be clear, this is not a streaming device. This is native hardware. They're calling it a PS4 Pro in your pocket.
A PS4 Pro in your pocket. That's a lot of power for a handheld.
It is. It's built on AMD's RDNA 5 architecture. For those not deep in the tech weeds, RDNA 5 is the graphics architecture, the engine of the chip. It's highly efficient. The goal is to run PS5 games at a solid 1080p, 60 frames per second locally.
Okay, that sounds great. I can play GTA 6 on the bus, but there is always a catch with Sony. What's the damage?
The rumored price point is $600.
$600?
$600.
Okay, hold on. That's insane, isn't it? You can buy a full console for less than that? You can buy a Steam Deck OLED for less than that? Are they out of their minds?
It's definitely a gamble. But here is the so what behind that price. They're marketing it as a bridge device. The architecture is designed to be compatible with updates for the PS6, which we aren't expecting until, 2028? They're trying to future-proof it so it doesn't become obsolete in 2 years.
Future-proof is such a dangerous word in tech. It usually just means overpriced today.
Yeah.
I don't know. $600 for a device that plays games I already own on my TV. That's a tough sell for anyone who isn't a diehard Sony fanboy.
It is. It's definitely targeting the enthusiast market, the people who have to have the best possible experience on the go. But if we're talking about expensive hardware disappointments, we have to talk about NVIDIA.
Oh, don't remind me. I was mentally preparing my bank account for the RTX 6090. My current PC sounds like a jet engine trying to take off whenever I run Cyberpunk. I needed that upgrade. And now...
Now you're waiting until the second half of 2027.
That is tragic. Why the delay? Is it just manufacturing issues?
It's a mix of things. First, there is a legitimate global shortage of GDDR7 memory. That's the super fast RAM these video cards need to handle 8K textures and, complex lighting. You can't get the memory, you can't build a card.
Okay, supply chains break. I get that.
But the bigger reason is strategic. NVIDIA has pivoted. They aren't really a gaming company first anymore. They're an AI company. They're pouring massive resources into their Blackwell server chips because that's what powers ChatGPT, Google Gemini, all the big AI models. That's where the $1 trillion valuation comes from. Gamers are just lower on the priority list.
We've been demoted. Great. But you mentioned in the notes there's a silver lining to this delay, something about a new feature.
Yes. The delay gives them time to refine the new architecture, codenamed Rubin. And the killer feature is neural frame generation.
We already have frame generation, right? My 40 series card does that. It inserts a fake frame between two real ones to smooth out the motion.
Yes. But current frame generation still relies heavily on the CPU and the game engine to tell it where things are. Neural frame generation is different. The leak describes it as the GPU essentially dreaming the gameplay. It uses a predictive AI model to generate frames almost entirely within the GPU without bugging the CPU at all.
Wait, wait. Dreaming? That sounds poetic, but also kind of worrying. If the GPU is just guessing what the next frame looks like, isn't that not the game?
That is the big debate. If the card creates 70% of the frames you see based on prediction rather than game code, are you playing the game? Or are you watching a video of the game that the AI's hallucinating in real time?
And does it work? I mean, if I'm playing a competitive shooter and the AI dreams a frame where an enemy is to the left, but he's actually to the right, I'm dead.
That's the risk. Latency and visual artifacts, ghosting, weird smearing. Those are the enemies here. NVIDIA claims the Rubin architecture solves this, but it raises a philosophical question about ownership of the image. The artist didn't draw that frame. The computer did.
It's wild. We are moving to a point where the hardware is improvising the visuals like a jazz musician. But speaking of computers trying to be smarter than us, let's talk about Windows 12.
Yes. The Core PC project.
I feel like every new Windows release is a threat. Update or die. What's the deal with Windows 12?
Well, the good news is they didn't go with a subscription model for the OS itself, which was the big fear. You don't have to pay a monthly fee just to boot up your laptop.
Thank goodness for small miracles.
But the hardware requirements are aggressive. Windows 12 is built entirely around the NPU, the neural processing unit.
We're seeing these pop up in laptops now. It's like a dedicated brain just for AI tasks, separate from the main CPU.
Exactly. And Windows 12 wants to use that brain constantly. The headline feature is super resolution. The OS uses the NPU to automatically upscale everything. Old videos, low-res streams, legacy apps.
So if I'm watching a grainy YouTube video from 2008, Windows 12 just fixes it.
In real time. It sharpens the edges, cleans up the noise, maybe even boosts the frame rate. It's like putting on prescription glasses for your monitor.
That sounds amazing, actually.
It is amazing. If you have an NPU, if you don't. Windows installs a light version.
Light. I hate the sound of that word.
You should. It disables the floating taskbar, the living desktop environment, and all those AI upscaling features. It essentially creates a two-tier society of PC users, those with AI silicon and those without. And marks a shift where the OS isn't just a platform, it's an active participant. It's trying to think for you.
It really feels like we are losing control, doesn't it? The GPU draws frames that don't exist. The OS changes the video quality without asking. We're just passengers.
And that loss of control or gain of autonomy, depending on how you look at it, is perfectly illustrated by the last and probably most controversial item on our list. Elon Musk and the Tesla Model Pi smartphone.
Okay, I have to be the skeptic here. I've seen the renders. I've read the leaks. This thing sounds like vaporware. It sounds like fan fiction. A phone made of rocket parts. Come on.
It does sound like sci-fi, I agree. But the sources are persistent. And prototypes have been spotted with SpaceX employees. The disruption isn't the phone itself. It's how it connects. The prototype has no SIM card slot.
No SIM slot. So it's an iPod Touch. How do you call anyone?
It connects directly to Starlink V2 satellites.
Direct to satellite. So bypassing AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, all of them.
Bypassing the entire terrestrial telecom infrastructure. The claim, and again, take this with a huge grain of salt until we see a review unit, is that because it uses the new V2 low Earth orbit satellites, you get high-speed internet comparable to fiber optic anywhere on Earth, middle of the Pacific, top of Everest, deep in the Amazon.
If, and that is a massive, capital letters IF, that is true, isn't that an extinction-level event for the phone carriers?
It's certainly a panic moment for Apple and Samsung. Their entire business model is tied to the carriers. You buy an iPhone, you get a contract. If Tesla sells a phone for the rumored price of $500...
Wait, $500?
That's the rumor.
Okay, now I know it's fake. A satellite phone made of Starship alloy with a solar panel on the back for $500. That's less than a mid-range Android.
It is aggressive pricing, likely subsidized by the Starlink subscription you'd inevitably need. But think about the ecosystem lock-in. You drive the Tesla, you use the Tesla phone, you connect to the Tesla satellite. It's the ultimate walled garden.
It's not a garden anymore. It's a fortress. It's Elon's world. We're just living in it.
It brings us back to that theme of autonomy. The phone finds the signal without a tower. The car drives itself. The GPU renders itself.
So let's zoom out and try to make sense of this week. We have Kratos getting emotional. We have Siri teleporting. We have Windows fixing our old videos. And we have a phone that literally talks to space.
The thread connecting all of this is the removal of friction. We're moving toward a world where technology functions independently of our inputs. We don't have to tweak the graphic settings. The AI does it. We don't have to find a cell tower. The satellite does it.
But with that lack of friction, we lose agency. We are trusting the hardware to define our reality for us.
And that leads to a pretty wild thought we touched on earlier. If Windows 12 is upscaling reality to look better than it is, and the NVIDIA GPU is inserting frames that don't exist in the game code, at what point does the technology stop displaying content and start hallucinating it?
That is the scary part. Are we watching the game the developers made, or are we watching the GPU's dream of that game?
If the AI fills in the blanks, whose art are we actually consuming? Is it the director's vision or the algorithm's interpretation?
It's the ship of Theseus, but for pixels. If you replace every single pixel with an AI-generated one, is it still the same image?
That is the question we are going to be asking for the next decade.
Well, on that existential bombshell, I think I'm going to go stare at a physical book for a while. Something that doesn't need a firmware update.
Probably a good idea.
Yeah.
And maybe keep that wallet closed until we see if the RTX 6090 is actually real.
Solid advice. Keep your eyes on the horizon, watch out for dreaming GPUs, and stay curious. We'll catch you in the next deep dive.